Welcome to the German Beer Academy. Nice to have you here. Let's have a great time together.
All right, beer lovers, ready to really get into it? This deep dive is taking us into the whole world of brewing.
I'm game if you are.
I'm totally there. So we're going deep into the International Beer Sommelier Seminar Documents Module 10 from the German Beer Academy.
Sounds intense.
Oh, it is, but it's also fascinating. It breaks down every little detail about how beer is made. And today, we're focusing on those crucial ingredients, water, malt, hops, and yeast.
Building blocks of every beer, for sure.
Absolutely. And you might think, water? Seriously. But trust me, it's way more important than you think. I mean, did you know that in the EU, the standards for brewing water are actually stricter than for drinking water?
It's true. And it's not just about being clean, though that's obviously key. It all comes down to the mineral content and the pH level.
Okay, so we're not just talking about pure H2O here. What kind of minerals come into play?
We're talking calcium, magnesium, sodium.
Yeah.
Those are some big players. Each one impacts the flavor in a different way.
No way. Yeah. So how does it work? Like, what does calcium actually do to the beer?
Well, for starters, calcium helps with clarity. You know, how clear or hazy the beer looks. But it also interacts with other ingredients during the brewing process, and that affects the final taste.
Oh, interesting. So it's not just about the minerals themselves, but how they work together. What about magnesium?
Magnesium is all about the yeast. It needs magnesium to be healthy and do its job during fermentation.
Right, because yeast is a living thing. It needs its nutrients. So what about sodium? Isn't that usually a bad thing when it comes to taste?
It can be, but in beer, if it's balanced just right, sodium can actually enhance those malty flavors we love. It's all about finding the right balance.
Wow, so it's like a delicate balancing act. Too much of one mineral, not enough of another, and the whole thing could be thrown off.
Exactly. It's a bit like chemistry, but for beer.
I love it. Beer chemistry. And this whole idea of regionality blows my mind. You're telling me the water source itself can actually influence the taste, like terroir in wine.
You got it. Just like certain regions are known for their wine because of the soil, the same goes for beer and water.
That's amazing. So what are some examples?
Well, think about Pilsner water from the Czech Republic. It's practically famous for making Pilsners.
Well, yeah, it's right there in the name.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
Hmm.
But it goes beyond that. There's Burton-on-Trent in England. Their water has a lot of sulfate, which is perfect for those hoppy IPAs.
Wow. So the water itself is practically begging for a certain style of beer to be brewed with it.
You could say that. And then you've got places like Dortmund and Munich in Germany. Each city has a distinct water profile, which has literally shaped their iconic beer styles for centuries.
That's incredible. It really makes you appreciate the impact of something we usually take for granted, right?
Exactly. I mean, who knew water could be so complex?
Right. And to think, we're just getting started.
It's a wild story.
Yeah.
Imagine this. It's the 16th century, and somehow some top fermenting ale yeast from Einbeck that's in northern Germany makes its way down to Bavaria.
Oh, I see where this is going. It's like a yeast migration.
Exactly. Maybe it hitched a ride in a brewer's cart. Who knows? But the point is, it ended up in Bavaria, which already had its own local yeast. And get this, the Bavarian yeast was cold tolerant.
So what happened when these two yeasts met? Did they have a little beer party?
They did. They mingled in those cool Bavarian cellars and bam, they created a hybrid yeast that could handle the cold. And that, my friend, is the ancestor of the lager yeast we know and love today.
No way. That crisp, clean lager I had the other day, that's thanks to that accidental yeast merger.
Pretty much. It's incredible how these things happen.
It's like a beer miracle.
You'd say that. It makes you appreciate the role of chance in history and in beer.
Speaking of history, we've got to talk about one of the most famous beer laws out there, the Reinheitsgebot. You know, the Bavarian Purity Law of 1516.
Ah, yes, the Reinheitsgebot. It's often seen as this super strict rule about what you can and can't put in beer. But the reality is a bit more complicated.
I'm sensing a but coming.
Well, first of all, the 1516 law wasn't even the first one of its kind. There were already similar rules in place, even in Bavaria.
So Bavaria's had a thing about beer purity for a while now.
Exactly. The 1516 law was important, sure. But it was part of a bigger trend of trying to regulate how beer was made, ensuring quality, and let's be honest, exerting some control.
Control over what? Spill the tea.
Well, grain was a big one, especially wheat. Remember, this is the 16th century, and wheat that's primarily for bread.
Makes sense. Bread is pretty essential.
Right. So by limiting how much wheat brewers could use, The rulers could make sure there was enough for everyone to have bread, especially the common folk.
Ah, so it was a way to prevent food shortages and keep people from revolting.
Clever.
Exactly. It was as much about social stability as it was about beer.
So this whole purity thing was partly a way to control the food supply. That's fascinating, but I'm guessing there were some unintended consequences too. Oh, there always are, aren't there? You see, while the Reinheitsgebot was meant to be this thing that protected the food supply and made sure beer was made properly, it actually ended up giving the ruling class a bit of a monopoly.
How so?
Well, they basically wrote themselves an exception into the law. They were still allowed to brew and sell wheat beers, even though other brewers couldn't.
Oh, come on. That's not fair.
Not really, no.
Mm-hmm.
It just goes to show you how rules, even those meant for good, can be twisted to benefit those in power. It's a good reminder to always look beyond the surface, right?
Absolutely. So this Reinheitsgebot, it wasn't just about pure ingredients. It was about power, economics, and all those juicy historical dynamics.
You got it. It's a classic example of how beer and history are intertwined.
So it was a double-edged sword, right? Good intentions, but also some unintended consequences. But what about today? Does anyone even care about the Reinheitsgebot anymore?
It's definitely still relevant, though maybe not in the way you might think. For a lot of German brewers, it's a point of pride. It shows they're committed to tradition, to using high-quality ingredients.
It's like a badge of honor, right?
We're sticking to the old ways, making beer the way it's supposed to be made.
Exactly. And you can't deny that dedication to quality has played a big part in building the reputation of German beer worldwide.
Oh, for sure. When you think German beer, you think quality, consistency. But I imagine not everyone's thrilled about this whole Reinheitsgebot thing. I mean, craft brewing is all about pushing boundaries, trying new things.
And that's where the tension comes in. Some people argue that the Reinheitsgebot, while it has its place, can be a bit limiting. It's like telling a chef they can only use salt and pepper, you know?
I get it. Sometimes you need more than the basics to create something truly special.
Right. And the craft brewing world thrives on experimentation, on using all sorts of interesting ingredients.
So what's the solution? How do you balance tradition and innovation? Seems like German brewers are caught in the middle. You'd be surprised how much diversity there is in the German brewing scene these days.
Hmm.
You've got your traditionalists who hold on to the Reinheitsgebot as a core principle. They see it as a mark of quality, a link to their heritage.
The guardians of tradition, keeping those classic styles alive.
Absolutely. But then you've got this new wave of craft brewers who are pushing the envelope. They're experimenting with new ingredients, new techniques, but still with a deep respect for the foundations of German brewing.
So it's not an either-or situation. There's room for both.
Exactly. It's about finding that balance, that harmony between old and new. And that's what makes the German beer scene so interesting. Right now, you have this incredible range from classic Reinheitsgebot beers to ones that really defy expectations.
That's so cool. It sounds like German brewers are really embracing the best of both worlds.
They are. And it's resulting in some seriously delicious beers.
I bet. Now, what about the rest of the world? Does the Reinheitsgebot have any impact beyond Germany?
It's definitely had an influence. For one thing, it shaped how people view German beer globally. This image of purity, tradition, high standards, it's become a kind of shorthand for quality.
Which, let's be honest, is a pretty good reputation to have.
Right. But I think it's also important to remember that the Reinheitsgebot isn't the only way to brew great beer. There are so many incredible beers out there that use ingredients beyond just water, barley, and hops.
Totally. It's like judging a book by its cover or a beer by its ingredient list. Just because it has something extra doesn't mean it's not amazing.
Exactly. The best beers, no matter where they're from, are made with passion, with skill, with an attention to detail.
Well said. So while the Reinheitsgebot is this fascinating part of beer history, it's just one small part of a much bigger, constantly evolving story.
And that's what's so exciting. There's always something new to discover in the world of beer.
Absolutely. So next time you're enjoying a beer, whether it's a classic German Pilsner or a hazy IPA from your local brewery, really take a moment to appreciate what went into making it, the history, the craftsmanship, the passion.
Here, here.
This has been an incredible journey. We've covered so much ground today, from water chemistry to the wild world of yeast to the enduring legacy of the Reinheitsgebot.
It's been a pleasure diving into the details with you.
Likewise. And to our listeners, thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Keep exploring, keep learning, and most importantly, keep enjoying great beer.
Cheers to that.
Until next time, cheers.
That's it for now.
Thanks for listening, and see you soon in the Academy.